Live from the WSBA TV podcast studio, welcome to our latest edition of the G-Race podcast.
And now, introducing the lovely Big O.
Welcome back to G-Race with the lovely and only Big O. We are so glad that you all came back to join us for another great G-Race show. Now listen, we're rooted in grace and we are founded in faith. But today's episode is one I believe that will bless somebody's soul, especially if you've ever faced a hard season and said, Lord, I don't know what's going on, but I know you will and you can. And I am excited about today because today my special guest is living proof of what happens with faith when faith and purpose collides. I know that for a fact because I've had some good conversations with my friend as we were trying to get ourselves together. She is a licensed marriage and family therapist, a licensed minister, and she's also in the process of becoming a clinical supervisor. She's been in the business for over 10 years and she's poured into others through counseling and from substance abuse to mental illness, working with adolescents in a residential facility. I'm just here to tell you, honey, she's not only a mother, but she is also a grandmother. And today we're talking to my friend Latrice Kenny. Hello, Latrice.
Hello. How are you?
We are so good. I'm so glad that you are here with me today. And I'm, you know, got to use my notes because, honey, you got a lot to tell us about. Honey, I was looking and I was like, baby, Latrice got it going on. I can't wait to dive in to talk about everything about mental illness, what is happening, how do we overcome your but God moments. You shared something with me in the hallway that we're going to touch on a little bit. But let's go ahead and get started and let's talk about what got you into the mental health field.
Well, I adopted some children, and I noticed that they had, I need you, I want you, but you stay away. And the reason for that is because if mom and dad couldn't get it together to keep me, to take care of me, then who are you?
Wow.
And so when I saw that pattern with children that I adopted and children that I fostered, it kind of piqued my interest in psychology. And so from there, I received my bachelor's in psychiatry, psychology, and then I got my master's degree in marriage and family therapy.
Did you always know you wanted to help people heal?
Yes, I did. And it didn't start as a career. It just started in church or people in the grocery store or the kids in the neighborhood, family members. So it started from there, and then it just grew to what it is today.
Now, you've worked in many areas, substance abuse, mental illness, adolescence. That's a heavy lifting for someone to even have to carry. How do you keep your faith strong with so many others who are burdened down?
Well, I believe that we cannot help anyone without Jesus Christ.
Yep. Don't make me run in here. Don't make me run, Latrice. Yes.
So you have to really, and the Bible says, be quick to listen and slow to speak. Mm. And so when you listen to people, you watch their actions, then you're able to kind of figure out what's kind of going on. And so doing that and staying prayed up, that is how you can help people. People will either want to be respected, heard, and loved.
Come on.
And then if you do that in love, then you can help those. There are some people that you won't be able to help because they really don't want it. But those that are seeking, you can take, but you got to take time. It's not instant. It's not the microwave. It takes time to help people move from one part of their life to a better part of their life.
Now, you said something that was so profound, that people want to be respected, they want to be heard,
and they want to be loved.
And they want to be loved. That is so true. And when you put those three things together, that really can cause a healing to take place.
Yes.
So that takes, that is, I've never heard it put in those terms before, but really it's true. That's all that we are all asking for as humans. To be heard, to be loved, and to be respected. I like that. Now, I was reading something powerful that you had sent in to me where you said mental illness is not a death sentence. Mm-hmm. Tell us about a moment in your career or your life that you truly saw a but God moment turn around.
I had a young man who was really dead set on committing suicide. Mm. And he was a youngster. He was around about 11. So 11? Young.
11?
Yes. And so he was being bullied, and then he became the bully, and everything just came crashing down. He had some stuff going on with him physically, and so he just said, you know what, I don't want to live this life. And so when we walked through what he was going through, and then we, because he was a really short little fella, and so we looked at some of the actors, like who were, we call them little people, I believe now,
yeah.
And how he had a beautiful wife, a beautiful family, and he was successful and he was wealthy. And then we talked about how suicide is a permanent solution for a temporary problem.
Yeah,
and
preaching.
So we walked through that. We walked through how he became the bully because he was bullied. And, you know, we have to face who we are. I'm 6'1".
Right.
And I have some pounds on me.
Mm-hmm.
So if someone calls me out, you know, a big something or other, okay, I am big. So
yeah.
And so
that's
we had,
me. When they said it, was like, hey, your name is Lovely Big O. Can't you see it? it's on me and it's in me, sugar.
Yes. So when he really looked at himself and saw the goodness that he had, how smart he is, how funny
yeah.
he is, and what he can accomplish in life, then he was like, you know what, I see it now that suicide is really not the answer.
That's right.
And so that was my big one.
At 11 years old,
I just couldn't
fathom. I mean, I'm thinking back when I was 11, honey, I'm somewhere trying to figure out the next Debbie snack or playing with the Barbie doll. It has to be something very heavy mm-hmm. on you to even want to end your life at 11.
Mm-hmm.
And we see it a lot more now with our children. Being a parent and a grandmother, how would you help deal with that? I mean, if it was someone in your family, immediate family, how do you say, hey, you recognize it? What is my next step? Could you tell somebody what would be the next step for them to do to help that child?
Well, you listen to them. What is really bothering them? Most of the time, it's what's behind the immediate action, the hopelessness. What is behind the hopelessness that you want in your life?
Mm.
And then let's seek help. Let's pray, but let's seek help as well. Let's get a therapist. Let's get you checked out. Maybe it's something hormonal. Maybe it is something situational.
Mm-hmm.
But get checked out and then walk with that person. We don't have all the answers. They have the answers, but our responsibility is to walk beside them and help guide them to their happiness or better self. And that's what I would say.
Listen, and that's something that you're right. It's always an underlying issue why someone is working like that. And then, you know, when you were talking about the hormones, who knows at that age why you're imbalanced the way you are. The thing I do that I recognize when speaking with you earlier is that you let it be known, honey, I'm a follower of Jesus Christ himself. So, baby, you let it be known. We can do some therapy and we can put some Jesus in it, honey. We
yes.
can work together to heal you. And I think that's good for people to understand, honey, there's nothing wrong with being a follower of the Lord, Savior Jesus Christ, and laying on somebody's couch, honey. I'm telling you today, he don't put you doctors here for nothing. He
right.
don't put people here for nothing. And that's why you can make things work together. And I feel like we've come a long way especially in our community, but there's still a stigma around mental health, and folks will pray for a job, a car, and a spouse, but they won't pray for their mind, and they won't go get help. What are some myths or barriers you've seen that keep people from seeking help?
It is generational for sure.
Mm.
What's done here stays here.
Ooh.
You don't tell anybody anything. And we all have an uncle or a cousin that wanders around and gets high or maybe have schizophrenia. And we don't want the outside people to know. And so when we tell our testimonies, which it says in the word, that we get over by our testimonies. So we are all around the world the same song. So
Come on now.
My cousin, your cousin, my sister, your best friend, we all kind of, we're going through this life together.
Yeah.
So if we're all happy together, then we all could be sad together as well.
Yeah.
And there should not be a stigma or someone pointing fingers to say that you are a little cuckoo or you're a little crazy.
Right.
So I like group therapy. The reason why I like group therapy is because we can say, this is the issue that I'm going through. This is how I made it through. This is how maybe you can make it through.
Mm-hmm.
Don't fall in this pitfall because I did that. And so it helped us to understand each other. And that's what we need to do, is understand each other.
Right.
It's not a bad thing to go and get help. And so not getting help is really making it worse.
You know, and that's what gets me about what goes on in this house stays in this house. Well, how can we help our fellow neighbor that might be going through the same thing if we just want to keep it all in the house,
right,
and nobody knows? And that is so detrimental for even our children, for your grandchildren,
yes,
for the next generation. Like, you've got to be, what did you say? You need to be heard, respected, and loved. And I think that all begins within the home, and you can't be afraid to share what is happening or what's going on, because how can you help free somebody? You gotta free them.
Yes.
You can't hold on to them.
Yes.
I think I admire that so much about people that deal with mental illness. You guys are so free about speaking out, especially because now you wear 5,697 hats, okay? You are a therapist, you're a minister, you're a mother, a grandmother. You're also a breast cancer survivor. Let me know that. But what is it like for you to have to balance all of that and still be able to pour into others while maintaining who you are?
I have a great family here. They're a family of choice in South Carolina here.
Did you say family of choice?
Yes, ma'am.
Come on now.
Family of choice.
And now they say
wonderful.
You can't pick your family, but now y'all done learned something new. I can.
You can. You really can. And so they surround us and we surround them. We link up. So when you think of a link, we link up together. And so you have to put your priorities in order,
mm-hmm,
you know, God first, and then your spouse, and then your family, and then work. Some people may disagree with that, but if you put God first, everything will line up under there. That's including putting your spouse first, then your children. Your children are going to grow up and leave, then you're with your spouse.
Yes.
So you have to have a boundaries as well, right?
Right.
And so don't let work overtake your home life. Spend time with your family. Have prayer night. Have game night.
Mm-hmm.
Watch something, you know, mindless if you like.
Yeah.
And so you're giving and you're not empty. So you pour back into yourself.
Yeah.
Have those family dinners after church.
Okay.
You know, if you're a Methodist and you're a Baptist and you're full gospel, that's okay. At the end of that afternoon on Sunday, let's meet up and have some fried chicken and greens.
I want everybody to understand what Latrice is saying. So for the G mamas, big mamas, and the grandmamas and these new school grandmas that don't cook no more, get in the kitchen. Because that's another problem that we have. Ain't nobody cooking no turkey wings, no neck bones, and collard greens and all of the good stuff like they used to. Everybody trying to go out somewhere and be brunch. Baby, I'm sick of brunch. You heard right here from the therapist herself. Get in the kitchen and cook this family dinner so that we can sit around the table and talk and have those conversations and heal within. I'm like,
yes.
Latrice, now you done said something. You done got me fired up over here. Because you said that we don't do that anymore.
No,
we really don't get together on Sundays. You know, so I hear a couple of people saying it, but that is important to be able to go to church, then leave, and we're going to come together as one and sit around that table to be able to be poured back in.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes. And also, that's fellowship.
Yes.
Well, in the therapist community, the therapeutic relationship is the most important thing.
Mm.
If I don't trust you, then I'm not going to share with you my deepest and my darkest. So when you're around the table eating those chicken wings and the cornbread, then you're having fellowship. And then you might just say, you know what? You know, Uncle such and such touched me when I was 12.
Ooh.
You know, and to be able to walk through that.
Yes.
And so fellowship is what we really need, starting at home with the family and then branching out in the community. So it won't be being ostracized because you have a mental illness, or if you're being beaten, or if you have domestic violence, or if you don't have enough money to buy dinner for your family. It's all fellowship.
I love that. I love it. With you being a breast cancer survivor, how long have you survived breast cancer?
2016.
Wow.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
And you, as a therapist, how did you take that on, you know, mental, not even as a therapist, but as Latrice, how did you take that on, you know, because that's huge. Listen, going through something like that, I don't even want to complain about a back pain. You know, you can't even, that is no comparison. How did you maintain being Latrice and separating yourself from saying, okay, I've got to do chemo, but I also got to make sure that this part of my life is still flowing. What was that like for you?
Well, at first it started out where they said it was a little lump. And then when I did the MRI, they said the whole breast had to go. It was full of cancer. And so I was newly separated. I'm like, oh my goodness, nobody want me, you know, what just been. But I had to, you know, we talk about, well, the Bible talks about the pressing of the oil. So I had to get in the Word, and I had to learn who God is as far as healing is concerned.
Come on now.
Healing the mind, healing the body, healing my family, because my daughter was really affected by that. She was really had a lot of anxiety around that. And so when it came up to the day of the operation, I had to put my faith where my mouth is, right? Because I do talk about how great God is, how faithful He is, how He's a healer. It's in the Bible, right?
Right.
But now you got to exercise that thing, right?
Yeah.
And so when I that morning I said, "Children, in Israel, before they got ready to go through that Red Sea, you said they will not see that enemy again." And I said, "Lord, I'm declaring that I will not see cancer again. I'm going to learn what I have to learn through this situation.
Come on.
And then I'm going to help others. But I know I'm not going to see this again." And I was really stern. We was having a little chitter chat in that little bathroom.
Come on.
And so it has been since 2016. I have been able to help folks, and I am cancer-free. No cancer anywhere in my body.
Well, we praise God, and we thank God for that. Honey, you do have to go bold and stern to the throne, honey. You do. You do. We say go nasty, but now we know that the Lord be like, "Now, Lord, you said that you would supply all of my needs now." And so I'm holding you to your word. Now,
yes.
That is powerful.
Yes.
And we just thank God that you are free and able to, you know, move about and help other people. Now, you're stepping into the next level, which is becoming a clinical supervisor.
Yes.
That's powerful. But what does that mean for you and what you do? And are you going to be able to pour into the next generation of therapists? And if so, honey, are they going to be ready for what you about to pour into them?
Well, my 9-to-5, I am the state director of therapeutic programming and education. And so with this new level of licensure, I will be able to pour into the other therapists. Everyone I would like to help, but I'm really kind of gearing towards people of color.
Okay.
So they can be prepared and ready. It's a little scary, you know, supervising others, because you're, you know, ultimately responsible while you're supervising them. But I think I'm up for the challenge. I am up for the challenge to help clinicians to help others. There's one thing that we have to know is it's called self of the therapist, right? And so, meaning I can't put my stuff on you. And I'm really big about that. I'm big about knowing what you can handle and knowing who you can help and taking your junk, sitting it outside the therapist room, and just deal one-on-one with the person in front of you. And so I'm looking forward to the next chapter to do that.
Well, honey, now I've never heard it told that way before. Would you say take your junk and sit it out there? You can't bring your junk in the storehouse. You're gonna put your junk out there.
No, it's very, very important when you sit in a therapist's seat.
Yes,
the people are vulnerable and hurt, and they look to you for guidance. You can't put your junk on there. You know, you can't, you know, all men are bad, girl. No, just get rid of them. No. Leave that outside and help the person. You know, there are times like if it's domestic violence and stuff like that. But leave your stuff outside and listen. If you are about God, listen to what the Holy Spirit is telling you while you're listening and then speak.
Okay, come on now. See, you were giving some good tips. And that's something that I want to talk about as well. What are some practices or practical ways families, especially mothers and grandmothers, can support loved ones who are battling mental illness or addictions? What are some practical ways that we can?
Mothers and grandmothers, we just want to take our babies and just hold them, right?
Right.
You have to, it's just like teaching a child to ride a bike. Okay, I'm going to stay with you for a little bit. And once you get your balance, then I'm going to have to let you go. And so that means let's get you some help. No, I'm not giving you money if I know that you're out there, you know, buying drugs, but I will buy you some sandwiches, you know. We have a lot of grandmothers where the grandchildren or even the children will come in and steal out the home and they let them stay with them.
Yes.
I'm not saying turn your back, but I am saying have healthy boundaries. I know that it would be hard if my grandson was, you know, were to become an addict, that would just really crush me. However, I have to help him in love, but with boundaries. I am not helping anyone if I'm not giving them any boundaries, if I'm just letting them stay there and not get a job, not try to get clean, not try to get help. That is really not helping them. And so I would say have healthy boundaries and do it in love.
So setting boundaries, I think that we oftentimes, even in our families, we don't know about boundaries because we feel like for some, we've been taught for so long, well, you know, he is your son or he is your husband or that's your daughter. So you got to do what, you know, was needed to be done. But I do believe what you're saying. If there's no boundaries, then how are you going to know when to stop?
Right.
There's got to be like a breaking point to be like, you know what? And before it's too late, you know, I always say that, like, when is enough enough? You know, when they're dead and gone, you know, you don't want that to happen. So, you know, being able to tell that loved one, hey, this is what we're going to do and this is how it's going to be. I don't want to see anything bad happen to you, but I can't have that to continue on happening to me. Because that weighs a lot sometimes on the person that is trying to be there, does it not?
It does weigh hard. When we're on the airplane, they said, if this cabin loses pressure and you were someone who needs help, you have to put the air mask on yourself first.
Yeah, no.
And then help someone else. You cannot help someone live when you're dying. And so
you want me to run out of you want me to run up out of here and start shouting in this corner, don't you? Say that one more time because I don't think the people in the back heard what you said.
You cannot help someone else when you are dying. And so you have to set the boundaries. You really do. And it's not being mean. It is helping them. They have to want to get better. They have to want to do something different with their lives. And so, yes, love them, help them. But I'm not going to help you kill yourself.
Well, I definitely know that we're not going to do that over here because, baby, I'm going to tell you right now, I think it's also good to know that you can use the word no and stand on it and still be okay. When it comes to the word no, is it okay to use the word no with your family?
Yes, most definitely.
I just, because sometimes family be like, well, that's still your daddy. That's still your mama. That's still your brother. And they're like, you're not supposed to say no. But like you said, if it's damaging you, I got to be able to put my foot down and say, okay, this is not helping my mental. This is wearing and tearing on me physically. I got to be able to put my foot down and say no.
We have consequences for our actions. So if I want to lose weight, I got to stop eating the bread and the butter constantly.
That starch does something to my spirit. It does something to my spirit too, Latrice. I ain't gonna lie to you. It do.
So every action we have, every decision that we make has a consequence. Mm-hmm. I love you. Yes, I love you. And however, I'm not giving you $100 because I know what you're going to go do with it. I need my light bill paid. I'm going to pay it this month and I might pay it next month, but you got to get on your feet for the third month. That's love, yeah, but those are boundaries.
Listen, you said pay the power bill one month, child. I'm going to be looking at you like, well, who's going to pay mine? So you said you... I don't know about that one, Latrice.
Okay.
Now.
Right.
But you're saying we need to be there. We do need to be there for the family. That what you're saying? Is that what I'm understanding?
Be there for the family, but be there, but set boundaries for yourself.
Listen, that's going to be the hardest part. I think people, I do think sometimes people have the ability to set those boundaries. But when it comes to them family members, we'd be like, I think it's my responsibility to take it on, to help. And I'd be like, Lord, that'd be a lot sometimes. I see it even like when people are as caretakers.
Yes. Well, I have a sister and she's always in need and I'm always helping. And one day when I was in prayer, praying for my sister and family, he said, are you Jesus? Are you God?
Is that what he said?
Yeah. You got to get me room to be who I am. Stop it. And that's how I learned to have boundaries.
Even in your own walk, that's what's so special. I think it's so special about even with therapists to be able to hear you say, I have this still going on so I can, I think it's really good. I have this going on so I can tell you about what you need to do because I've been there and done that. Is it hard for you to sometimes separate Latrice from Dr. Latrice, the therapist? Because I know that would be hard for me.
No, because I'm all the same. So I am a therapist and I am Latrice. And I really listen to what the Lord tells me before I speak. Because I had a smart mouth at one time in my life. So I had to curve that.
I could never imagine that. Oh, God. Not you, Dr. Latrice.
But boundaries, I'm telling you, boundaries. Even in your job, there has to be boundaries.
On the J-O-B?
Yes.
You could tell. Now, you know that. Well, I don't know if we can do that with it. Can we do that with the boss, man? Can we tell our boss no?
You can. You can't be like, oh, hello, no. Oh. But you can be like, you know what, boss? All right, I know that this deadline is coming up on Monday. Today is Wednesday. I'm gonna get it some done on Wednesday, some on Thursday, and some on Friday. I should be done by Friday, so I will report this to you on Friday afternoon, so you can support what you have to do on Monday.
Wow. See, I would have never thought. You know what? I was in corporate America, I think, for what, over 25 years, and I don't think I've ever told my boss no. I think I just kind of pushed through and kind of griped and complained about it after the fact. And now that I'm sitting back and looking and say, I probably could have sent an email and said, I'm not able to make things happen. So, no, you know.
We train people how to treat us. With everyday living.
Even on the job.
Yes, we train people how to treat us.
Even on the J-O-B, you are exactly right.
Yes.
And people are only going to treat you like you have trained them to treat you.
Correct.
Latrice, now you was just dropping a bunch of nuggets and jewels downhill on this good podcast today. Well, Latrice, it has been an absolute honor and pleasure to have you on the G-Race podcast. I cannot wait to have you back because you are going to have to come back.
Oh, wow.
I know you're going to have some more butt God moments. But before we go, I want to leave our listeners with what you stated before. Mental illness is not a death sentence. God can and will use doctors, therapists, medicine, and prayer to all work together for a better you and a better healing. So thank you so much for joining G-Race with the lovely Big O.
Well, thank you.
All right, I'm calling all G-Racers out. If you want to be a guest on the G-Race show with the lovely Big O, send me your story right now at lovelybigo@96.3theblock.com, or you can go on Facebook under G-Race. That's right, it's G-Race on Facebook, and send your story if you want to be a guest on the G-Race with the lovely Big O.